touch the picture. It is more perfect, more clean, more beautifully delineated than anything out of Nathaniel West. A day of the ladybug. I mean, locusts have a certain point in life. Ladybugs are just ladybugs, you know. Anyway, I'm coming along Park Avenue. You got to get the scene now. See, look. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And the Seagram building is standing there like a gigantic monument to swilling, off over there on the left. Have you noticed that most of the big buildings here in town recently have been named after drinkies of one kind or another? There's the Seagram building. There's Whoopi Cola down there. All his new buildings, see? So, anyway, there's that big old building standing up there. And it's beautiful, you see. The sun is just gone now, and the moon is hanging up over there in the darkness. It's kind of like velvet. And you can see that great shaft of golden light reaching up into the sky, like some terrible, unseen, deeply wrenched, deeply felt cry. Oh, we're here, people. Or something. I remember when it used to storm like that, Mrs. Bruner used to say that God was bowling. You could hear the thunder booming up there. She said that was God's bowling. And he used to get more spares. Funny thing, he wasn't much of a bowler, actually. But you could hear that booming and banging out there. And there it is. There's that beautiful purple sky up there. Now, you see the picture? God is not bowling on this night. It's a beautiful night. By the way, go and look out. There's a moon out there hanging out over New York. I guess it's gone now. Is it? Is it still out there? Will someone please report if the moon is out there? We don't want to give anyone any false, you know. I'll tell you this, though. We notice something very interesting here at the radio station, and most policemen who work the desk late at night will also tell you the same thing, that at this time of the month, it rises almost, you can just practically tell without even having a calendar, without ever seeing a dateline on a newspaper, you can tell what time of the month it is by the kind of calls that come in. And about the middle of the month, everything is calm, peaceful. Once in a while, somebody, you know, a little irritation will call in. But then gradually, there's an intensity that begins to come into their voice. Until finally, people call, will you take, oh, I'm not excited. I just want to talk. And then you know it's a full moon. You know that the tides are working. You know that the saps and the juices are flowing through those tributaries. And there ain't no stopping it. And then, of course, gradually the moon assumes another quadrant, and calm, like a great sea of caro syrup flows out over the land again. Are you aware of that? This is no myth. It's terrible to find it out. You've seen it on your thing there in the phone. Well, let me tell you about the nuttiness and the beautiful quality. Oh, I don't know what it is. It's kind of a... Are you familiar with Nathaniel West, or am I speaking Sanskrit here to you? There is a chapter in Nathaniel West, one chapter in particular, in the last chapter, I believe it's the last chapter of The Day of the Locust, that describes in a sort of impressionistic way the kind of insane madness and yet the peculiar wild beauty of the time in which we live, where all things seem to be moving in all different directions and people are wildly grabbing at brass rings, and all the while, of course, grabbing brass rings with the secret desire to out-grab those around them. There is no love lost between people in spite of the placards, in spite of the signs, in spite of the things that we like to pretend. But here it is, you see. I'm walking along Park Avenue about 10 o'clock, the Seagram building, and I can see off to my right is the Lever House, and I'm walking towards Grand Central Station. Beautiful. And it was a moment almost unbelievable in its completeness. You know, it had a completeness all the way down the line. And there is a building over there. I don't know quite which one it is, but it has a court. It's a very modern building, one of these new buildings just a little bit downtown from the Lever House on the same side, you know, one of these big cube sort of glass places. And I'm walking through there, and the light is sort of shining down on everything. Everything is light. There's no place for people, by the way, in those buildings. People get in the way of them. Have you noticed that? That people sitting in those buildings look completely out of context. These buildings are built for Muzak systems, and they're built for computing systems and things. They're built for steel elevators that move up and down all by themselves. I saw a thing happen one night. I hate to even report it to you. I'm walking along, because I do a lot of walking at night, coming off the air at midnight and walking and working up here till 2, 3 some nights. I'm walking along Park Avenue one night, and I actually saw an elevator door open in a building. And the door closed, and it went up, and there was nobody in it. The lights were all lit there. And yes, standing in that same building, there was a large man made out of bronze, standing there, kindly, sort of resting his hands on his hips. You could see a big lump there where his wallet was in his back pocket, this great big old bronze mustache hanging down there, and he's just standing there in the lobby watching the elevators. He's made out of pure bronze. Well, anyway, I come along tonight. It was just tonight this happened. I'm coming along Park Avenue, and it's, you know, the weekend is coming up. People are out. Things are moving. And I did a little thing, I paid obeisance to some god. I don't know what it is. I went under this great big building. A light was falling down, and it was a beautiful thing in a way, in a kind of a mechanistic, clean-limbed, antiseptic, toothpaste way. This is the kind of beauty that stuff is. You can't really describe it beauty. It's like Brancusiville, you know? Just all, you know who Brancusi, the sculptor, you know, Flight? He made things out of chromium, you know, just sort of smooth pieces of metal. And I walked under this building. Now, you got the picture. It's about 10 o'clock. And under the building there's a little arcade. And on the corner of the arcade, there was sitting in the window, and remember, this is Park Avenue, a large ermine bunny rabbit. Easter bunny. Big old ermine Easter bunny there. And he was looking out at me, you know, with opal eyes, real opals. And he's sitting there surrounded by these symbolic eggs. You see, this was a very hip designer. These eggs were square. They were painted like eggs, but they were square eggs. Very uncomfortable, I can tell you that immediately. Seeing that, I'm not even a chicken. I saw that and I immediately started to itch, thinking the terrible thing, what I must feel like a chicken. Well, I see, and sitting next to the Easter Bunny is this beautiful pile of eggs, and he's surrounded by orchids, all of them mink. Well, I looked at that, and it was just a beautiful moment, because somehow this captures so much of the religious spirit of America these days. It just captures it somehow and holds it there, with all that light coming down in the buildings and things moving around. And I continue on moving through the arcade, and here comes an old tank bum. Boy, I'll tell you, nothing looks more anachronistic than a tank bum in the shadow of Lever House. I'm telling you, he is reeling along there, you know, and he's got his legs, and he had 7 arms, by the way, at least, and about 6 pairs of legs, and he's going along there, and he's singing and hollering, and he's, you know, he's just leaving a trail of bumdom behind him. I don't know how he got over in that neighborhood. He was way out of his territory. But he's just going along. He's swimming. You see, swimming past all these people, and there were several tall, thin, angular ladies going past. They walked right through him. If you ever seen anybody walk right through, he just kept right on going, his eyeballs going in 7 different ways, and the bunny looking out at him, and the mink orchids, all of it was there. See, and I walked right on past, and I turned around, and I'm on 47th Street. Yes, it was 47th Street. I looked back, and there's this bum outlined against this big building. You could just see him staggering along, and these two people are walking past, and parked, beautifully silhouetted, right there in front of it, was a magnificent fawn-colored Rolls. Well, I put my hand on that radiator, and it was warm. Have you ever warmed your hands on the radiator of a gigantic fawn-colored Rolls? Just stood there, you know, and the bum is staggering away, and that old ermine bunny was looking out at me, and those mink orchids were quietly blooming, and those two chicks continued right on down the street. They didn't even miss a beat. Not a beat. Oh, I just thought you ought to know. Ho, how can you report this? How will they know about this 1,000 years from now when they dig us up and they pick up all the little drinks? They just cannot see this image, this beautiful picture. And it rested there for a moment. Well, I continued to walk, walked on down, and I was walking along Vanderbilt, you know, I'm right in the middle of it. This is New Yorkie, right there. For all of you who are out there and who wonder the neighborhood I'm in, it's a high rent district, Dad. In spades. And I'm walking along, and out of the Yale Club comes two... They've almost ran right into me. You know, the Yale Club is right on Vanderbilt there. And I'm walking past, going on up towards 42nd Street, and these two guys came out, and it was just like an image. just like a beautiful line out of a cartoon. The guy says, well, I don't know, Charles, whether or not I take that sort of thing from Ethel, knowing what kind of a girl Ethel is. And they turned and went on down. And immediately I could see Ethel. Oh, Ethel, I'm with you, baby. I can understand it. I can understand it. You know, baby, Ethel is out there. I was amazed that this guy knew somebody named Ethel to begin with. Is there anybody out? Hello there. Is there anybody out there tonight? Now, be very careful. Watch it here now. Is there anyone out there tonight who is leading a ruined life? Does it lie about you like old clamshells strewn outside of an east side seafood joint? Useless, spent, used, gone, taken, wrenched from the sea of vitality? Yes. Do you rue the day ere you were spawned? Minavachivi, eh? A burnt out hulk, a shell? Is it okay? I mean, it's okay. I mean, is it? And after all, it's Friday, you know. Don't panic. It's easy enough to panic. Of course, I'll tell you the thing about Friday that must be pointed out. That it's the one magic night of the week, you see, because the weekend has arrived. About Tuesday, you don't really think about the weekend. The weekend you begin to consider Thursday morning. Well, actually, in some of the organizations here in New York, the weekend starts Wednesday night. And depending on how high up the scale you are, the weekend sometimes runs all the way from late Tuesday. And you know. In fact, we have three executives here who only have to call in three times a year now. It's the weekend. They're on. You don't expect anyone to work on the weekend, do you? Well, let me tell you, we're here. Speaking of... No, I suppose it doesn't matter one way or the other, really. I mean, but that broken hulk, that shell of yours, that gutted candle, that sputtered... Speaking of gutted candles, this is WOR, AM, and FM, New York.
Today and tomorrow, it's Alcoa.
Be a carefree family this summer with a new chain-link fence of Alcoa aluminum. Imagine the peace of mind that comes from knowing where your children are all the time. And watch your flowers, shrubs, and young trees flourish when an aluminum fence goes up. They're protected, too. And remember, aluminum fencing just naturally stays bright and beautiful. No red rust, no painting, no tiresome maintenance ever. Protect your property and your family with a new chain-link fence made of Alcoa aluminum.
Today and tomorrow, it's Alcoa, Alcoa, Alcoa is aluminum.
Friends, yes, you can be carefree, and you can live a carefree life this summer by fencing out the world, keeping yourself nicely tied in, and you can call Corvette Shop at Home Service for details and low prices. It's a fascinating commercial. Build and live a carefree life by building a fence around your house. Oh, yeah, no, it's just... But, of course, it says it in one way, you know, speaking of the carefree life. I guess you learned, you know, that I have an ad here. We're living a life of almost complete vicarious existence in so many ways. Did you read recently some trade group has just made a proposal that they only want to work five hours a day, something like that? 5 hours a day? I'll tell you, I'd go out of my skull if I had nothing to do. Why don't these people want to work? What do they want to do? They want to spend all their time up watching the Mets play ball, which is even more work than work? I mean, what are they going to do is sit around and... I'm curious about that. I have a feeling that most people imagine that total progress consists of doing nothing. Seriously, that the total end product would be to be able to escape from any kind of involvement in the world. You would never have to do anything. And I'm very curious about what kind of a monument our time is going to leave behind it. I mean, there were the pyramids of another time, you know, and there were the Gothic temples of another time. I suspect a lot of things we're going to leave behind. And they're going to dig it up in great mounds. Believe me. You know, speaking of that product, you begin to learn something about how, I guess you might say, how the world works as opposed to how people think it works when you're very young. I don't think you really question things much after a certain point in your life. You either know or you don't know. I remember one time I'm this kid, and you learn these things often in the social way, the social world that swirls up and down and around and has all kinds of little mores and little rules and regulations and little buttons that are pushed. And we had this thing in our school called an auditorium session. I must have been about, 10 or 12 years old. Well, a little bit older than that. I think I was about, I was a freshman in high school, something like 13. And I was playing in the band. Now, kids in the band have a very special opportunity when they're, you know, in the auditorium session world, because generally they play when the kids are coming in and they play when the kids are going out. And they sit through two shows, because most auditorium sessions are done in two sections. So I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm way in the back end and I'm playing bass. And this was one of the great moments of discovery of how the world is. And I'm standing there right by the stage. And this day, Mr. Spencer gets up. He was the principal that we had at that period. And Spencer was a very official kind who looked something like Barry Goldwater. Oh, yes, he was a very clear-eyed type and very right-thinking sort of man. And very straight. He wore gray ties, white shirts, gray suit, gray under the whole business, you see. And Spencer is out there, and he used to give a little talk before every auditorium session. We have just finished playing the National Emblem March, which we always played when the kids are coming into the auditorium session. They all come towards you in great waves, you know, and I'm back there playing the bass. And then we pause. Spencer stands up, and he says, before we have today's auditorium session, boys and girls, I'd like to make a few announcements. The English Club meeting that was scheduled for tonight, the ninth period, is now postponed and will be held tomorrow night. There will be a meeting of the SPQR, that is the Latin Club, will meet in Miss Fife's room tonight at 3:30. Let's see, is there anything else, Miss Bonner? No, that's all right, thank you very much. And now, boys and girls, we really have a treat for you this afternoon. We're going to have a visit from one of our old grads. And he's an old grad who's gone out into the world and has done a lot of interesting things and has come back here to the United States. And by the way, he spent his last couple of years over in, I believe it was Japan. And he's coming back now to tell us some things that you might find interesting. Well, I'm sitting there, you know, this was an old story. And I'm sitting back there with my string bass, and sitting next to me was this little swinging chick, Betty Swisher. She also played the bass. Did I ever tell you what happened one night with Betty Swisher? And one of the worst things that ever happened to me in my life. You see, when you're playing the string bass and you're a little kid, one of the funniest things you can do with your string bass is to spin it, you know? You spin it, you go... Then you spin it around again. You know, it gives you a sense, you know, Duke Ellington'sville and the whole business, you know, really swing. Well, Betty was a very, very angry little girl. Although Betty, you know, is one of those little girls who had grown up to be not a little girl, but was still a little girl. You know what I mean? She had all the equipment. And so much so, it was very embarrassing to the rest of us, you see, who didn't even understand the equipment, but she had it there, you know. Betty was still a little girl, but a very square little girl. You know, the kind that you see on the Saturday Evening Post covers and all that. But a very angry little girl, because, you see, she was torn in between the two things. On the one side, there was the she that she saw in the mirror, and on the other side was the brownie that resided in her soul. A very terrible dichotomy, you see. Well, Betty is standing there one day playing the bass, and I'm playing the bass next to her. And I'm a kid, you know. I'm drawn towards her, really. I'm drawn to her like flies at a hog killing. And on the other side is Ernie Dunker. He is also drawn towards her, and she was in the middle, bass players. I'm spinning the bass, and Betty used to always give me the dirty look, and she always played with the bow. Boom! I hit her bass with my bass, split hers right down the back. And we just stood for about 3 milliseconds. And you could hear the reverberation of the two basses. Oy. I don't know whether you know anything about how much a bass costs. And Betty started to cry. She started to cry, and we are playing the overture to Norma. And poor old Mr. Dirks is directing the orchestra, you see, and he's over there swinging in front of the French horns. And he turns and he looks back over, just about to give the cue for the basses, and he sees Betty crying. Looks back like, and I'm standing there holding my bass at half mast, and Dunker has disappeared. I will not tell you the rest of that rotten, sordid story, what I was called upon to do to make penance. But nevertheless, you get an idea of what the band is. So we're standing down there. Betty is on my right. On the other side of Betty is Ernie Dunker, and Carl Rose is on my left. So we're all standing down there, you see, and we're already bored by the old grad. Well, let me tell you what the old grad did. This guy gets up. He must have been he seemed like 100 years old, you know. But there was something funny about this old grad. He stands up, and the first thing this old grad starts to do is to tell us a funny story that he was reminded of coming down the street. He says, you know, there was a funny thing happened to me coming down the street. I'm walking here towards Hammond High, and I start to think of a funny thing that happened. He starts to tell us the wildest, hairiest, sensational story that I have heard since I had left the dressing room not more than 4 hours past. And he starts telling this story, and I knew the story. I knew what the story was. It was a wild, sensational, fantastic, obscene story. And he's telling it to the auditorium session. And I turn around, and Carl Rose, who had told me the story, he turns around, and both of us are looking, and Spencer's just said he never listened to stories. I'm sure he never heard a story in his life. And Miss Bonner, Miss Bonner wouldn't have understood it if she'd heard it. She's sitting up there with the big, benign smile and the china teeth looking out over the kids. And I turn it, and I look at Carl Rose, and Carl Rose looks at me, and we both turn around like that, and all of a sudden, Dunker starts to laugh, because Dunker's heard the story, too. Betty is just sitting there in between us. And this guy continues on with the story, and suddenly I could see what happened. The guy is about three-quarters of the way through the story, and he realizes what he's about to do. He's about to tell us this awful, rotten, terrible, crummy, stinking story, and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know where to go now. He's got the whole thing set up. You see, there were three guys in the restaurant. They were in the Red Rooster restaurant. One of them was an Irishman, and one of them was a green, red, purple. And she turns around, and Dirks sees us doing this. Dirks then looks back up, and poor old grad is now knee-deep in it, trying to get out. And it's the only time I've ever seen a guy change his story and stop a story right in the middle of the story when he had 400 people listening. He just says, now, about China. On the other hand, in Japan, we find that, well, the kids are all sitting there with their mouths hanging open, and about 14 guys in the back row, way up, you know, the wise guy section in the auditorium, they know the story, too. Come on, finish the story! Like that it goes. Well, there was a little murmur in the group, and I'm sitting down there trying to squinch lower and lower because I think I see this thing is going from bad to worse, because then it begins to be very apparent that this guy is about at least three quarters squiffed. Have you ever been asked to address a high school auditorium session when you are inside of yourself always a kid and you are very impressed by teachers and auditorium sessions of people who get up on stages? Well, obviously, this guy has stopped by the Bluebird Tavern 6 times on the way. And he's going okay now. You see, he's got his keel back on the ground a little bit, and he's telling us about Tokyo, and suddenly, without any warning, he starts to sing. And I'll tell you, he starts to sing the wildest, sneakiest, hairiest song, and he's singing away there. And he starts, you see what he started to do? He started to sing because he said, I have a funny song that all the boys used to sing when I was in Japan at the club. And he would sing this song, and I knew about the song. And the song had to do with Notre Dame. Do any of you know the song? Where they change all the names? Do you know that song? You don't know it. You know the university, don't you? Well, it's a song about the backfield of Notre Dame. I can only tell you this. If you know the song, you're already falling off your chair. If you don't know the song, it's okay. You can imagine. So he's singing away there, and Mr. Spencer stands up, and he walks off the stage, and he walks down, and the old grad continues to talk, and he walks right down in front to Mr. Dirks. Mr. Dirks gets the thing in the ear. Mr. Dirks stands up then. He motions to us, number 173 in the book, And the old grad is continuing to sing. And with that, we quietly come behind him. And we are playing On the Mall. The curtain comes down. Mr. Spencer stands up before the audience. He says, well, that's the auditorium session for today, kids. And don't forget now, the SPQR will meet at 3:30 this afternoon. Miss Fife's English class, her English club, is postponed until tomorrow afternoon. Now file out quietly. And all the kids just sat there for about at least 15 milliseconds with that funny look. Got up and walked out. And the rest of the kids started to come in the next session. Spencer holds up his hand, says, this auditorium session has been canceled. Back to your class. Back to your class. And the band is playing da 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 dee 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 la da da dee 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 dee. And I learned something. I was worried after that. It made me sick inside for some reason. You know that funny sickness you get when you have seen a terribly embarrassing moment? And about 15 minutes later, I see this man walking down the hall with Mr. Spencer. And they're walking, they're talking very animatedly, you know, very friendly. They're banging each other on the shoulders and that. And they're walking away, and I'm putting my bass away in the band room. And Dunker's putting his bass away in the band room. He is saying not a word. And Betty, of course, isn't talking to us ever since Dunker told her the story. We're putting the things away, and we walked out. And, you know, it was about 100 years later, must have been at least, it was two ice ages later, I returned from the Army. It was a very funny moment. And I came back to my high school. For some reason or other, all guys who came back from the Army go back to their school. You notice that? Or at least during that period they did. And I came back and I went up to see Miss Snyder. Miss Snyder was my homeroom teacher. And there I was, you know, I was in full uniform, all kinds of stuff all over me and patches and things. And the kids are sitting down and I come up and, Miss Snyder, how are you? And she says, why don't you go down and see Mr. Spencer? I said, fine. Me and Miss Spencer had no words ever when I was in high school, you know, except, you know, once in a while they'd give me a slip of paper to go on. He'd give me the business, and that's about it. So I went down to see Mr. Spencer, and I went into his office. He said, oh, come in. You're Shepherd, aren't you? Of course, I remember you. Fred? No, Gene Shepherd. That's, of course, I remember you. Oh, you've really grown, haven't you? Actually, what had happened is he had gotten smaller. So we sat down, and what can you say? You know, he says, well, how'd you like the war? I said, well, it was a very good war, actually. pretty good war. He said, well, I'm glad to see you're back. Very glad to see you. What do you intend to do now? I said, well, I don't know, I guess I'll go to school someplace. I figure on GI Bill, you know. Well, that's very good. I'm very glad to see you young fellas coming back and taking advantage of the government's offers to help you through college. And it's certainly good that you have Say, I've got an idea. For the first moment we were making contact, he looked right at me and he says, why don't you address the auditorium session? We will have an auditorium session tomorrow, and the kids would love to talk to somebody or hear somebody talk, one of the people from the school who has just come back from the Army. I couldn't help it. I said, Mr. Spencer, do you remember the time that man came back and sang that song? He said, what song? I said, well, don't you remember the song about Notre Dame? And the time, remember he started to tell that story? He said, when was that? Well, who was that? Who, when? I said, well, don't you remember the blonde guy that came back and he sang the song and he was a little tank? Don't you remember that? I was playing in the band that day. I said, gee, I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all. And Miss Bonner is in the next room. I said, well, Miss Bonner, you were on the stage. You remember that day? She said, no, I don't remember that incident. You say that he was drunk. Nobody ever speaks to our auditorium session drunk. Tells dirty stories. Oh, no. And I sat there for a minute. I couldn't... And they were erasing. Either they were erasing or covering up. I couldn't figure out which. I thought it was one of the greatest things that ever happened in my high school career. And neither one of them would admit to being there. And they were standing on the stage. He called the curtain down. And I wanted to say, Spencer, you're an old phony. You called the curtain down. I was there. Remember, Dirks? We played On the Mall. Da 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 da. Remember that? Da 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 da. Remember? And he just went right on saying, you know, it would be very wonderful, very interesting. You have so many adventures to tell them about the war. Tell them about the Signal Corps. That is what you're in there, isn't it, with the cross flags there, the final thing? Yes, the Signal Corps. And you can tell them about all those little things. What are those ribbons, those things there? You can tell them about all that, and why don't you come in? And I started to get sick inside. Not sick with Mr. Spencer, but I suddenly, I was scared. The idea of talking before the high school auditorium session, you know, with my own high school, it's just, I could see myself at the Bluebird. And then I could see myself arriving on the stage and outdoing the other old grad in spades, because I really had learned something in the ensuing 4.5 years, let me tell you. So I said, well, I don't know, Mr. Spencer. I don't think so. I don't think I'd better. And he says, well, I'm very sorry, because I'm sure the children would. And with that, he did this turn. You know, the turn that executives have of turning back to their desk, meaning it's all over now, go. And so the pleasantries are done. So I got up and I put my hat on and I go out into the hall, and who do I meet but another GI coming down the hall. He's making the circuit from his homeroom, and he's now going into Mr. Spencer's office. And I grab him by the shoulder, you know, I says, come here, Mac. And he says, what? And it was a guy about 2 classes before. I says, don't go in, don't waste your time. Come on, Dad, let's go. And he looked in, he sees Miss Bonner wearing that funny little Brillo pad on the top of her head for hair, you know. And he says, okay. And so 5 minutes later, we're across the street at the Bluebird, both of us, and we're talking. Now, I'm not here to tell you about Spencer. But wouldn't it be great tonight if you could remember all the things that you have erased? Really? You know, that's an interesting phenomenon that is even, in a sense, a national phenomenon. Are you aware that whole nations sometimes erase large areas of their past? If they don't erase them, they change them so that they're unrecognizable, which is another kind of erasure. How many guys sitting out there right now have a version of their life which they tell people, which they now almost accept as the real version, but which has no relationship to the actual facts? I'm curious about that. I just wonder how much of that is in every man's life. How many chicks, I'm curious about that too, how many chicks have a romantic life that is purely in their mind? Has no relationship to reality, none whatsoever. And they're constantly having these wild romances with somebody they see in the bus or somebody in the office. That's even more intriguing. You know, it's totally in the mind. It has nothing to do with the actual facts. And so this is just, in a sense, kind of an aspect of it, but not the whole story of it, too. But old Spencer, I'm sure, had just erased something. And Miss Bonner had erased something. Just erased the facts. And I see this constantly coming out in people who have wild political attitudes, either wildly conservative, they have the ability to change almost every given statement. Somebody wrote to me and said, as I understand it, Mr. Shepherd, a liberal is a man who is intent upon making people do something against their better wishes. A liberal is a man who wants to make people do things that are very unnatural. That's what a liberal is to my way of thinking. And as I understand it, I don't figure you're one of them. Because to me, a liberal is a man who wants to make people do things that he don't want to do, like, say, for example, integrate. And like, say, for example, accept his neighbor as an equal. This is not natural, and he don't want to do that. So I don't figure you're a liberal, because you don't want me to do that. I said, oh, boy, what wild circumlocution, you know. What beautiful examples of hunting, that strange, don't worry about it, I'll do it when I need to do it. That strange thing that is within us that says, no, you're not what you are. Stop it, you're something else. And it's better, it's much better. It's much better than anyone ever knows. much better. Just the place for a snark, the bellman cried as he landed his crew with care. Just the place for a snark. I've said it twice. That alone should encourage the crew. Just the place for a snark. I've said it thrice. What I tell you three times is true. The crew was complete. It included a boots, a maker of bonnets and hoods, a barrister, brought to arrange their disputes, and a broker to value their goods. A billiard marker, whose skill was immense, might perhaps have won more than his share, but a banker, engaged at enormous expense, had the whole of their cash in his care. There was also a beaver that paced the deck, or would sit making lace in the bow, and had often, the bellman said, saved them from wreck, though none of the sailors knew how. There was one who was famed for the number of things he forgot when he entered the ship. His umbrella, his watch, all his jewels and rings, and the clothes he had bought for the trip. He had 42 boxes, all carefully packed with his name painted clearly on each. But since he omitted to mention the fact, they were all left behind on the beach. The loss of his clothes hardly mattered, because he had 7 coats on when he came, with 3 pairs of boots. But the worst of it was that he had wholly forgotten his name. He would answer to, "Hi," or to any loud cry such as, "Fry me," or, "Fritter my wig," to, "What you may call him," or, "What was his name?" But especially, "Thingamajig." Well, for those who preferred a more forcible word, he had different names from these. His intimate friends called him Candleends, and his enemies Toasted Cheese. His form is ungainly, his intellect small, so the bellman would often remark, but his courage is perfect, and that, after all, is the one thing that one needs when one is hunting a snark. How's your courage? How do you hunt your snark? In the file cabinets after dark? Dialing a prayer? Taped eternally? Or watching late movies? And hoping against hope that Faschenstieg will do it this time? With the new pineapple whoopee flavor? Or the strawberry yum-yum concoction that might perhaps straighten all those ungainly forms deep down in the heart of the aquarium of the mind. $10 million fantail goldfish, all swimming around a china castle, and a molded hulk on the bottom of a glass case, all hunting for a snark. Oh, speaking for snarks, and in a passing way, if you're having trouble with a slight burry rough note tonight, the hum in the preamp, we would suggest you consult the Electronic Workshop, one of the last of the honest places, 26 West 8th Street. By the way, I've been in the electronic business for time and time, and I can name on my left hand the 3 or 4 places that I know that I could take something to have done. You saw it happen. And they talk just like normal people. And stuff doesn't come out of chutes, you know, from somewhere in the distance, all wrapped up with tape on it. It's the Electronic Workshop, 26 West 8th Street in the Village. And wherever you are, they're there. Oh, but don't go yet, you see. Don't go. You see, Mrs. Bruner had her way. And her way was a good one. And so did Mr. Bruner. His way was a dull one, too. What's all right? You're going to be okay. By the way, I denied it today. They asked me again about it. I told them it wasn't true. That I've known you too long for it to be true. And that I wouldn't believe it anyway, even if it was true. And if it was true, it wouldn't make any difference with me. So don't worry. I stood up for you.